Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deese Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and November is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. We are going to be talking with Jade Williams about Alzheimer's and raising awareness about this disease. Before we do, I have a few announcements I'd like to share. We are very excited to welcome Dr. Rudra Putna, an oncology hematology physician with McFarland Clinic, to our team of visiting specialists at Van Deese Medical Center. Dr. Rudra Putna treats a wide variety of diseases and disorders, including breast cancer, colon and rectal cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer, lymphoma, urological and gynecological cancers, cancers of the head and neck, and blood diseases. Dr. Rudra Putna will start seeing patients in our specialty clinic on November 20th. You can call to schedule an appointment at 515-832-7746. I will mention Dr. Rudra Putna will be back on December 11th. And after the first of the year, he will be on a consistent schedule seeing patients the fourth Thursday morning of each month. Also very excited to announce general orthopedic Dr. Samasetti will also be joining our team in the surgery department at Van Deese Medical Center beginning in January. Dr. Samasetti's clinical experience ranges from teaching and mentoring students as a clinical assistant professor and chief of orthopedics at University of Arizona to providing full-spectrum orthopedic care in rural Iowa at Mahaska Health Partnership in Oskaloosa. Most recently, Dr. Samasetti has served as staff orthopedic surgeon, section chief of orthopedics at Broadlands Medical Center in Des Moines. Again, Dr. Samasetti is a general orthopedic surgeon. He will be seeing patients for shoulders, knees, hips, hands, doing all orthopedic work and surgeries here at our hospital. He will begin to see patients in January of 2026. If you have questions, you may call the specialty clinic department at 515-832-7746. A couple other quick announcements to make. The November Webster City Community Blood Drive is scheduled for tomorrow, November 13th, in the clinic boardroom at Van Deese Medical Center. It will be from 12:30 to 5:30. We encourage you to donate blood and give strength, and in turn, you will receive a Scooter's cookie and a 20% off coupon to be used on one item in our gift shop. To schedule an appointment, you may go online to lifeservebloodcenter.org or call their 800 number at 1-800-287-4903. Also, just as a general reminder to all of our seniors out there, the Medicare Part D open enrollment period is going on now through December 7th. Any changes made to prescription drug plans will become effective as of January 1st. We are a sponsor site for the Senior Health Insurance Information Program, and we are very fortunate to have three volunteer SHIP counselors available to review and compare plans. If you have questions, you can call their number, 515-832-7769. Please leave your name and your phone number and a good time for one of the counselors to return the call. I do ask that people be patient. Our counselors are working on comparisons, reviewing those plans, and they will call you back. SHIP is a free confidential service of the State of Iowa Insurance Division. SHIP does not sell or promote any products or services. Their services are objective and confidential. And with that, we are going to get started into our program today. Again, as I mentioned, November is Alzheimer's Awareness Month, so it's a great time to be talking about raising awareness about Alzheimer's disease. More than 6.2 million Americans are living with it. So it definitely is an important topic to be discussing on our program. Very pleased to have Jade Williams here with us today. Good morning, Jade.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on again. Hopefully our listeners are excited and not tired of hearing me.
They are not tired of hearing you at all. You bring interesting topics and provide great shows each month, so we certainly appreciate that.
Thanks. So yeah, today I'd like to just delve in and discuss Alzheimer's disease and really what it is and how the science is evolving. There's so many new things on the forefront in regards to management and what we're going to be able to do here in the near future. Also, what will this mean for patients as well as their families? As Lori mentioned, Alzheimer's is one of the most common causes of dementia and affects millions worldwide. And our scientific understanding has grown, but there's still so many challenges out there in regards to management and treatment. So Alzheimer's is really just a progressive neurodegenerative disease that's typically marked by memory loss, cognitive decline, and behavior changes, as well as eventual loss of autonomy for the patient. The primary takeaway today, however, is that the disease begins decades before the symptoms often appear, and so the pathology really builds up well before the memory loss is seen in the patient. Pathologically, the hallmark features are what you've probably heard about in the news or in different programming is really the focus has been on this beta amyloid plaque and the intracellular hyperphosphorylated tau neurofibrillary tangles, or the tau tangles is what's primarily been on the news. And these, there's two kind of backings of science and what the progression is. So there's been the amyloid cascade hypothesis and then also the tau hypothesis. But overall, Alzheimer's is really being recognized as being more multifactorial, and that the involvement is really neuroinflammation, vascular and metabolic dysfunction, as well as genetics. So you may have heard about the APOE4 specifically, and then of course lifestyle and environment influenced. So I did kind of come up with a metaphor, and I hope this isn't confusing, but like I had talked about that this is really developing years before we start to see the memory loss. If you think of the Alzheimer's brain as like a city, so you're, say, imagine like New York City, and sleep is going to be your garbage men. So the garbage men come around and they clean up the garbage as you progress on a weekly basis. But really that beta amyloid is the trash that starts to pile up and starts to kind of clog the streets. And then you have your neurons, which is the cells in your brain that help the information flow. And those are your buildings, right? Or your apartment buildings. And so you're pumping out this beta amyloid. The garbage men during sleep are to be coming and kind of cleaning this up, but might not necessarily be able to do it because maybe you're not sleeping well or other environmental influences. And then you have the tau tangles, which would be the wiring in these buildings that are starting to short out, because maybe the buildings are old and not up to code. And then on top of all of that, you throw in this inflammation process that's occurring, which would be thought of as an overactive emergency response system. So whether this is like your ambulance and your police, and so they're trying to get up and down the streetways, but the beta amyloid or the garbage is essentially blocking the transportation or the ability for them to get where they need to be. And then unfortunately, we start to see these vascular issues, which would really be like the electrical or the power within these buildings and not being able to deliver correctly. So all of these different networks are being impacted with this disease process. So if the damage is starting early, obviously it's quite complex. And so really the goal is, how do we detect it? And what's going to lead us to needing early detection as well as identification of those risk factors? So, you know, risk factors in general is going to have to consider your age, genetics, family history, cardiovascular and metabolic factors such as hypertension, diabetes, and obesity, your lifestyle choices such as diet, exercise, cognitive engagement, any trauma, and then of course exposures to infections. So early detection and biomarkers, historically we've thought of detection as being utilized within a clinical setting and may use imaging such as a CT or an MRI, possibly even PET scans. And this imaging really looks at changes in the brain, such as like atrophy, vascular changes. The more advanced can look for amyloid and tau, and then also providers or specialists can use cerebral spinal fluid to determine those biomarkers. So one of the biggest things that I found while I was pulling all this information was that there is an annual Alzheimer's clinical trial pipeline report that's developed. And so the 2025 pipeline review noted that there was 182 active clinical trials and testing 138 drugs globally. So this is around the world, which is amazing. And of those, 74% are disease-targeted therapies versus only symptom management, and 18% target amyloid specifically. So it's a diverse group right now of clinical trials that are out there and being done. Newer targets include tau protein aggregation, neuroinflammation, vascular metabolic dysfunction, synaptic function, as well as multi-targeted directed therapies, which hit multiple pathways simultaneously, which would be the ultimate goal. And the one that I'm most excited about is that the review noted that we're looking at repurposing current drugs that are on the market. So the pipeline showed many existing drugs being repurposed, so 46 actually. And the beauty of this is we already know the safety profile of these medications, and it can also speed up the timeline for trial to hopefully approval for patient. So really the takeaway for this is that we're moving forward from this symptom treatment for Alzheimer's disease, which is great, and now have a disease-modifying treatment or a richer pipeline, so to speak, with many trials in different phases and as well as better diagnostics that have been developed. But there's just no actual cure for this disease process at this time. It's still very early. So hopefully with the use of different clinical trials and the introduction of AI modeling, this could be something hopefully in the near future that we'll see some vast improvements in. But the crucial element really is that it's utmost important to intervene early and identify and tailor treatment for the patient that will help drive future success as well. So unfortunately, there's so minimal understanding still in regards to the pathology of this disease process. And so that's where I think the real hiccup probably is for patients. We do have some emerging research that has came out. And so that's really when we're looking at the systems biology approach. So talking about how the amyloid, the beta amyloid works, the tau, and then the conjunction with the neuroinflammation and the vascular dysfunction, as well as the metabolic dysfunction, and then really having to take into account the different cell functions within the brain, like the glial cells, and what is happening and causing this to happen realistically. Looking at that vascular and neurovascular mechanism, there's lots of great research going on with that and trying to figure out how you can reduce the or improve the clearance of the beta amyloids, as well as the oxygen delivery, and seeing what they can do to offset the issues regarding metabolism. And then considering precision medicine. So how can you tailor it or make it more patient specific, and identifying those risk profiles for those patients who might be at an increased risk of development. And thinking about what really from an ethical and social implication this looks like. So considering diagnostics and treatment and how it becomes more complex and expensive, and also considering the privacy of the patient, but what that might mean for future development of medications as well. And then really, what does a cure look like? You know, a lot of the studies I read talked about this looking more so like how we manage HIV and cancer now for patients, mm-hmm. how it becomes a more multi-drug early intervention, and then really target multiple pathways to see what we can do to bring the best benefit to the patient, as well as to their families, because this really doesn't just affect the patient, unfortunately. So practical tips could be making sure that you find a specialist neurology or a memory clinic. We're an affiliate with Mercy Maine. They have a great neurology center down at the main campus. Broadlawns also has a memory clinic available that you can get a referral to from your primary care if you're concerned, where they can do those very specific and advanced testing if the patient qualifies or if they feel it's appropriate. And then also thinking about how can you adjust your lifestyle factors that could be modifiable, mm-hmm. essentially, or have an impact on that. And then thinking about or looking into what are the support networks that are available within your area, and consider the advanced care planning. So, you know, science is advancing, but Alzheimer's remains a major challenge, and early awareness, proactive care, and staying informed matter. You know, a great place to look if you need more information is always Alzheimer's Association and then clinicaltrials.gov, or you can always reach out to your local memory clinics and see what information they have available as well.
Jade, thank you so much for sharing the information. It is exciting to hear about the research that is being done, and specifically the clinical trials that are going on with Alzheimer's patients. I do have a few questions that I just want to kind of interject into our conversation. So in talking about what we've seen for like scientific advances in Alzheimer's, what would you say has probably been the most significant, like most recently in the last, say, 2 to 3 years?
So really, I think that would have to be the lecanemab, and that was approved in January of 2023 by the FDA. And like I said earlier, it's specifically for the early Alzheimer's, but based on data, it's showing showing significant improvement for those patients. And then in 2024, the donepanab was also received traditional approval for early Alzheimer's. Those are both infusions and do require a specialist to be involved. But the reason it's significant is because there has been just decades of research poured into Alzheimer's disease and unfortunately failed drug trials. So this treatment up to this point was mainly just symptomatic management, and their goal was really to boost acetylcholine, so rather than modifying the underlying disease mechanisms for the patient.
Very good. Another question I have, and this has just come out recently, about the funding that is going to go towards Alzheimer's. And what do you think? Like, how close might we be to having, say, even a blood test for Alzheimer's available for patients?
Yeah, so they're getting closer, and there's not necessarily one that's available, say, from your family practice or mm-hmm. from your primary provider, but more so from your, if you were able to see a specialist. So in May of this year, the USDA or FDA approved and cleared for the first blood test. And it's a whole mouthful for this, but it's basically looking at the tau and beta amyloid plasma ratio. And so it takes your blood and measures this ratio of plasma of the tau to the beta amyloid. And in a clinical study, it was shown to have good, about a 91.7% positive predictive factor among those with those amyloid plaques, and then 97.3% negative among those without. So the accuracy of the test is really good. I mean, yes, there's a little bit of room for error there, but And that was in a large sample size. It was approximately 500 patients. So pretty remarkable. And so the test is now commercially available in the US, but it has to be done via a large lab. And like I said, typically you're going to be seeing a specialist to receive this type of testing. The Alzheimer's Association, though, however, did publish some recent clinical practice guidelines, and this was in July of this year, for a blood-based biomarker. So in patients with cognitive impairment seen in a specialist clinic specifically, so it has to be a memory center, the BBM test had over a 90% sensitivity and over 75% specificity. So it can also be utilized, and it can be used for substitution of a PET scan or CSF biomarkers in patients. So that's something else to consider, or you can have the conversation with your primary care doctor, and if you're looking or interested in a referral to a memory center.
Very good. So start with your primary care provider and have those discussions, and they can go from there.
Yes.
Very good. I think one of the most important questions many people have is what they can do today to reduce their risk of Alzheimer's.
Yeah, so unfortunately, this is multifactorial, and there's no like one specific thing that can be done. But there's so many small steps that we can take to help or try to achieve this goal. And so this could be its whole own presentation or conversation, but I'll try and hit just on some of the necessary high points in regards to this. So primarily, we have the strong evidence that lifestyle and what we can do for medical factors can really reduce the risk for developing Alzheimer's disease, or at least slow the progression of it. So making sure that you're protecting your brain through heart and metabolic health. So focusing on keeping that blood pressure in check, your blood sugars in check, and of course your cholesterol in a healthy range, and trying to manage or prevent diabetes, obesity, and any concerns regarding sleep apnea. Instituting a regular exercise regimen would be great, and thinking about what can be done about those target markers that we talk about during your health maintenance visit or your annual wellness visit with your providers. So keeping your blood pressure less than 130 over 80, treating that sleep apnea if needed, and then aiming for at least 150 minutes of moderate exercise a week. And this could be anything from just brisk walking, swimming. So really whatever you can integrate into your life, but how can you make sure that you're developing a good routine for yourself? And then focus on a Mediterranean diet if possible, or the MindStyle diet. So really that's the Mediterranean plus the DASH, so dietary approaches to stop hypertension. So we've thrown in a whole nother discussion in regards to diet, but
yes.
This one really emphasizes your leafy greens and berries and nuts, whole grains, olive oils, beans, fish, and poultry, and then trying to minimize that red meat, as well as butter, pastries, and processed foods. And really the key reason for this is it's been shown to cut Alzheimer's risk by up to 53% in those in the most adherent groups. So this comes from all those great studies where they've done on blue zones and clinical trials and meta-analyses and all the good science that's there. And 53% is a pretty big reduction in your risk if you think about it. And it's mainly coming from your diet, which is something we all generally have control over. And then also thinking about why would this work? Well, because it's an anti-inflammatory, and it's rich in those polyphenols, omega-3s, and antioxidants. So we're really just trying to give our body and our brain all those really good nutrients that it needs to do the functions. And then thinking about, you know, just a practical step for that would be 1 to 2 servings of leafy greens daily. If you can consume fish twice weekly, specifically salmon or sardines, and then a small handful of nuts daily, as well as berries several times a week. So slow ways to integrate it into your daily life. Thinking about staying physically active, so that aerobic exercise and then strength training for balance. And practical steps would be like your 30 to 45 minutes of moderate exercise at least 4 to 5 days a week, and then resistance training 2 days a week, and even just daily walking. So if you can get up your activity level, you know, more moving, less sitting is really the key takeaway there. Prioritizing your sleep quality. So 7 to 9 hours of good quality sleep. Really, I just ask my patients, do you wake up and feel rested? So if you wake up in the morning, do you feel rested? And if the answer is no, then really kind of figuring out how can we better improve that for you. And then thinking about developing a consistent sleep schedule and what that might look like. And, you know, practical steps would be avoiding those screens and caffeine before bed. If you do have or are concerned about sleep apnea, having that investigated. And then if you have issues in regards to insomnia, what can you do and how can you improve that? And most notably, what can we do to hopefully try and alleviate that without maybe introducing a new medication? And then thinking about how to keep your mind engaged and avoiding toxins, you know, minimizing smoking and alcohol intake as best as you can, and then managing your stress and mental health. So mindfulness, considering yoga, or even just when you're out on your active walking, if you can just really kind of try and center yourself and maybe not have distractions, that's a good way of integrating mindfulness into your daily. And then thinking about medical management and supplements, my biggest concern with that is just make sure you're being cautious that supplements that could be listed as brain health are often unregulated and can also be costly, and there might be limited evidence. So making sure that you do have those conversations with your primary care in regards to the supplements that you're choosing to take and where would be a reputable place to obtain those, to making sure they're not maybe riddled with heavy metals. Mm-hmm. Because that can be a concern. And for those at risk with or have early cognitive impairment, if you already have mild symptoms or a family history, you can always talk with your provider about those biomarker testing or imaging. Early detection helps plan a lifestyle and treatment for you as a patient. And then considering enrolling in preventative or lifestyle trials, those are available, and you can, you know, simply do a Google search and see what's available out there for you. And I also know a lot of private insurances have been offering new benefits or programs where you can get like a health coach. Some of them are integrating like a CGM, a dietitian, a scale. I mean, the options are kind of endless. So just really seeing what's available with your current health insurance and going from there. And then making sure that you're managing those vascular risks and staying active. So even if you have mild cognitive impairment, you know, lifestyle interventions can offset that for the patient.
Excellent.
So it's a lot of information.
It is a lot of information, but a great place to end the show, because that's very encouraging. What you just shared is a lot of what people can do to maybe help reduce their risk or slow progression are lifestyle modifications that they can control. And so some great information that you shared at the end there, and people can think about, you know, their diet, their physical activity, supplementation, all of those things. And so I think it is very encouraging news to share. Again, Jade, thank you for another terrific show. Great information. I do want to mention that nurse practitioner Jade Williams is available to see patients at Vandy's Family Health Clinic. You can call 515-832-7800 to schedule an appointment. Thanks again, Jade.
Thank you.
And that will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deese Medical Center, where our focus is you.